welcome to episode 411 of Retro Encounter, RPG Fans Weekly Podcast of many topics. I'm Mike Solosi. And listeners, right there in the title we have the word Muso, or Musa. And if you don't know what that is, you're in for an educational hour plus. But if you do, then you probably know exactly what this episode is going to be. But before we get into that nitty-gritty, let's introduce the rest of the panel, starting with Audible.
Hello.
And Wes Iliff.
Hi, everybody.
Wes, Audra, the three of us are here because we have a mutual interest, or at least in my case, a curiosity about Muso video games. And to a wider English-speaking audience, they might be called Warriors games, or specifically games in the Dynasty Warriors lineage. Dynasty Warriors games have been made by Koei since the late 1990s. A subsidiary of Koei called Omega Force develops almost all of them. And since the early 2000s, they've been making increasingly elaborate and increasingly varied games in this formula. But before we talk about that formula, let's talk a little bit about Koei and why this has become like almost the series that they're the most well-known about. Muso means unrivaled and is basically a combat-focused adaptation of some of Koei's old strategy games. In the 1980s, Koei made several kinds of games. They had sports games and light and puzzle games in their repertoire as well, but their most popular games were historical strategy sims, the two biggest ones being Romance of the Three Kingdoms and Nobunaga's Ambition. And Romance of the Three Kingdoms is about Three Kingdoms era China, which is a period of about 100 years. That's the fall of the Han Dynasty, and then three different factions trying to seize control of China as we know it. And there's just absolutely decades and of betrayals and battles and strategies and dozens, but probably hundreds of characters playing major roles. And that period of China has been very, very well mythologized and studied because of all the colorful personalities there and how important it was for China's history. In particular, in a large novel called Romance of the Three Kingdoms, which came out about 1,000 years after the historical events that took place. So it's unclear how much of Romance of the Three Kingdoms is fictional or mythologized or even verifiable. Like there are records of these historical figures doing a lot of these things, but the novel Romance of the Three Kingdoms is one of the most studied pieces of Chinese literature. Like people have entire hobbies, careers, lifestyles about Romance of the Three Kingdoms. So this strategy sim made in the 1980s by Koei was their most successful game. And I think one of Alibaba's biggest mobile games nowadays, Alibaba is a very, very large corporation in China, is a mobile strategy version of Romance of the Three Kingdoms. But we're not quite at Dynasty Warriors yet because we have to keep moving on. One of Koei's other big successful strategy sims in the 80s was Nobunaga's Ambition, about the Sengoku era of Japanese history. Sengoku era is what you might call sort of like the peak of samurai Japan or like post-classical Japan, which is a period of around 200 years where the emperor did not have very much power and all the power rested in local lords called daimyo. And one emperor or one sort of imperially appointed war leader of Japan called the Shogun. And the Warring States or Sengoku era is an era where there was absolutely wild amounts of violence and politics about the struggles between these daimyos and who gets to be the next Shogun. And it ended with Oda Nobunaga conquering about half of Japan. Then after his passing, one of his retainers, Toyotomi Hideyoshi sort of finished conquering Japan. And then after Toyotomi's death, there was a civil war / succession war about who would control the newly unified land. And that was won by Tokugawa Ieyasu. And the Tokugawas ruled Japan for about 250 years after that. So this period of this Warring States period, which is again a little over 200 years, is one of the most celebrated and studied parts of Japanese history. So like these two strategy games that Koei had made in starting in the 1980s and lasting into the 2010s are basically historical strategy sims about very, very popular eras of Chinese and Japanese history. There were NES versions made of Romance of the Three Kingdoms and Nobunaga's Ambition. There, you can find translations of them out there. They're weird resource management, probably could have been made into a board game, or probably were made into board games, but are they're difficult to get into nowadays and don't have a lot of RPG elements, so I don't want to dwell on them too much. But so Koei was known for these historical sims. Then in 1996, one of their creative divisions, which is later named Omega Force, does a fighting game adaptation of Romance of the Three Kingdoms called Dynasty Warriors. The original Dynasty Warriors was a one-on-one fighting game that with a lot of the more prominent characters from Three Kingdoms China. And then later Dynasty Warriors games are resembling what we think of a modern Musou game. The Japanese title of Dynasty Warriors is Son Goku Musou, or Three Kingdoms Unrivaled. The modern vision of a Musou game that you probably have, that everyone has, is sort of player characters surrounded by dozens or even hundreds of enemy troops, just defeating large swaths of them in a row. There's some tactical elements and some customization elements, but mostly it's you changing between famous Chinese generals rapidly, defeating huge entire armies of enemy troops. And in 2004, they did their own Sengoku or Warring States Japan version of Dynasty Warriors called Samurai Warriors. And now we're, I think Dynasty Warriors 10 is on the horizon. And they did crossover games like Warriors Orochi, which is like a big mythology, time travel, everyone fighting together kind of crossover game. Several of those Musou games had expansions. The Extreme Legends expansions are usually just adding more and more characters, while the expansions called Tactics have a more sort of almost more like the old strategy sims, where you have a map that you have to control different parts of the map, and there's a like in between territory control and between all the fighting. But they've released dozens of Dynasty Warriors and Samurai Warriors games over the last 25 years. Maybe I'm speaking it into existence, but Koei Tecmo did have an announcement in December of last year that they were working on multiple games and would announce something soon, but we haven't had that announcement yet as of the end of March 2024. So maybe that's happening very soon. But yeah, that was an overlong explanation. I'm so sorry, Wes and Audra. But before we get into the more RPG-focused Musou games, let's talk about these. What are our relationships with Dynasty Warriors and or Samurai Warriors? Starting with Wes, who I think may have the most to say in this entire episode.
Yeah, this is kind of my wheelhouse, huh? I started with Dynasty Warriors 2, which was the first traditional, you know, Musou-style game, back when it released. And I've been playing ever since because I had a blast just going and leveling up characters and powering up and gaining new weapons with friends. It started as a multiplayer experience for me, but over time the series grew, the stories grew a little bit more complicated, and I stuck with it and got really invested in the idea of like learning about Romance of the Three Kingdoms and learning about Sengoku era Japan. And occasionally even learning more about Zelda, which is a series that I'm not the world's biggest fan of, but we'll get there. Ultimately, it was that sense of progression that really kept me invested in the series the whole time. The fact that your characters, you know, level up and gain new weapons, gain new skills, they grow and evolve, is one of the coolest aspects of the whole series for me, is taking one character and running them through the entirety of their history in, you know, the Three Kingdoms era or what have you, and watching them grow throughout it.
Yeah, that's sort of the one of the overall progression loops of a Dynasty Warriors game. Just sort of like, I mean, the action is not as intense or as demanding as some other action games, but just like killing huge numbers of enemies, seeing your characters level up and grow, it's therapeutic in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, I always think of it as it's not so much an action game because there's no challenge for the most part in the enemies that you're defeating. Instead, you are this giant wrecking ball and you have this huge map with all kinds of things going on, and you have to make decisions about where you're going and what you're doing. And on the easier difficulties, it's just that therapeutic, like, yeah, I'm going to go on ahead and just wipe out as many people as I want. But on harder difficulties, you actually have to make these strategic decisions about, okay, where am I going to go next? I need to know this level, or I need to know who's in trouble so I know who to go save. And that's what lends it a little bit more depth than it seems at first. Although that bare bones therapeutic guy bashing experience is nothing to shake a stick at.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a relative newcomer to the series and everything, and I kind of do love the therapy of it. And so far, I've only dabbled in the spinoffs, really, but they're very fun. And I do love the progression and just having a character decimate tons of enemies.
My relationship with Dynasty Warriors and Samurai Warriors is, I guess, in between yours. I do not own a single Dynasty Warriors or Samurai Warriors game, but two of my friends in particular, I mean, no one's going to look them up. Their names are David and Eric. Both own several. I think Eric owns like every single one from the PS2 era onward, and David doesn't own all of them, but he has a bunch. And I've played so much second player multiplayer with those two guys, like split screen. Oh, let's just run some maps in Dynasty Warriors. This is my favorite guy. You can't use him. Neither of us should use Lubu because that's unfair. Like that kind of deal. It's like they're not totally mindless action games, like Wes was talking about before, but they're satisfying in their own way, and you don't have to devote 100% attention to them. So I'm like, I've played many, many rounds of Dynasty Warriors at Eric's house with maybe three or four of us over there, Dynasty Warriors on one TV and the day's football or basketball games on the other TV. Like that it's, and then pass the controller, pay attention to the game. Like it's a very, very good second screen experience in that way. But, but if you do become invested, I mean, you can weirdly learn a non-trivial amount of history and lore of these two specific eras.
This is kind of the game that you want to play after a long day where you don't want to play games. It's the unwind for when your normal method of unwinding isn't working out for you. But it is really cool learning more about these pieces of history and legend alongside it. It's hard not to get invested in it if you play it long enough, because you start to, you know, gain favorite characters. Like Mike said, you know, eventually everyone will have their favorite character and say, oh, don't use that character, I'm leveling them up. And then you want to learn more about that character and like, hey, how close is this to history? How wild have we gone off topic? Because, you know, you'll have some characters who look like traditional Chinese warriors with, you know, Chinese swords, and some characters who use a giant canoe to hit people, which is a little bit less realistic. It's the bombastic and the traditional kind of married together.
And the guy uses a canoe probably because there's an anecdote in Romance of the Three Kingdoms where he defeats bandits by swinging a canoe at them or something.
Almost certainly.
Yeah, there's a lot of vignettes and historical nods or literary nods like that. And Wes, I think you mentioned that you got a little bit into Romance of the Three Kingdoms through these games. Like, have you read a full translation of the book, which is not a small tome, I should mention.
I haven't made it all the way through. I made a valiant attempt back in high school, and I think one of these days I will need to circle back, but I've read all kinds of, you know, wiki articles on it and, you know, done my half-hearted internet research, if nothing else.
And we should mention, I mean, these games do not hold very many historical truths. I mean, there's characters that will meet each other and fight each other when in the actual history they were not alive at the same time. Looking at all the Miyamoto Musashi cameos and Samurai Warriors, mostly. Again, it's a appreciation and celebration of these two historical eras that have, you know, sort of carved out their own specific niche of gameplay. That it's almost a genre within itself, and as such, since 2007, has spun off into way more places than just those two specific historical time periods. But before we move on, Wes, I just have a quick question. Either for Dynasty Warriors or Samurai Warriors or both, do you have a main? Who's a recurring favorite?
Oh, that's tough. For a long time, it was Sun Tse, because he's got these Tonfas that are absolutely a joy to play as.
Oh, I love Tonfas.
They're so good.
Living out your Suikoden 2 life there.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's what got me into it, because he's like dressed in red and everything too. He's got a little bit of that look about him. But Samurai Warriors has this character named Hanbei Takanaka, and he uses a giant yo-yo, essentially. It's like a compass on his arm with a string attached, and he swings it out. And one of the things in Warriors games is that anyone who has big, wide sweeping attacks is an absolute blast to play as. And like whipping out a giant yo-yo, you know, feet in front of you and slashing through is just absolutely entertaining. It's the same reason why in One Piece Pirate Warriors, Luffy with his stretchy abilities is so fun to play as.
I'm not sure I have a favorite Samurai Warriors character because I've played more Dynasty Warriors than Samurai Warriors. But in Dynasty Warriors, I like Ma Chao a lot. Because he's just a spear guy, but on horseback, he attacks. You can clearly attack to either both sides or just one side, and he gives you basically more control on horse than a lot of other characters do. And Ma Chao was like a famously good horse rider in the official history. So that's their nod for that. But
and
I mean.
He's themed like a dragoon, which doesn't hurt.
Yes, his cool green dragony armor. I like that a lot. But again, I definitely haven't played every Dynasty Warriors game. But in the ones I remember playing in, like David's and Eric's basements, like Ma Chao was one of my guys. But don't use Lubu. Come on, like you're not an 11-year-old child anymore.
You're cheating yourself at that point.
Yeah. But okay, moving on from those games. Wes mentioned getting into Zelda lore and mentioned Pirate Warriors. That's where we're going next. Starting in 2007, Omega Force started going just beyond those two historical periods, and over a period of let's say around 6 years, released three Gundam Musou games, which were called was it called Gundam Warriors in North America?
Dynasty Warriors Gundam.
Yeah, Dynasty Warriors Gundam in North America, or Gundam Musou in Japan. Some Hokuto no Ken / Fist of the North Star games. One of them was called Ken's Rage in North America, but they're just Hokuto no Musou in Japanese. And then One Piece Pirate Warriors, which I think is One Piece Kaizoku Musou in Japanese. And all of those games got sequels. I think it was three Gundam games, two Hokuto no Ken games, and then we're in something like Pirate Warriors 5 or 6 now?
We're on Pirate Warriors 4 is the most recent. And then there was one extra Dynasty Warriors Gundam, but it was like treated as a spinoff.
Right, okay. I guess I only saw the three numbered main ones. But yes. So those are three extremely iconic anime that are, you know, among the very most popular in the entire world. And so I think Koei saw an opportunity. It's like, these games are really popular, and we've to a point where they've become a genre more than just a series. So can we expand this genre or adapt this genre into other popular series? And the answer was a resounding yes, because all of these games got sequels. I have read all of Hokuto no Ken and One Piece. They're two of my favorite series of all time. I read the manga more than I watch the anime for either of those. And I'm not the biggest Gundam fan, but there's Gundam fans out there if you go looking for them.
I love Gundam, so I'm actually, now I'm very curious about the Gundam.
Oh, I can make you some recommendations.
Oh, all right. Awesome.
Well, I mean, Wes, give us some recommendations. Do you think that of those three series, are there one or two games you think stand out better than the others?
I think if you want to play a Gundam game, Dynasty Warriors Gundam 2 is probably the best, because it was the last game where they had big open maps instead of kind of hallways connecting to big rooms. And in those games, you can play as Gundams that can transform, and being able to like transform into a spaceship and go jetting across maps is absolute pure joy.
I do like video games where you transform. It's true.
Yes.
It's so good. And One Piece, honestly, the most recent is fantastic. It goes through like the entire story of the manga up through, you know, one of the most recent arcs in Wano.
So maybe not every fight in Wano, but a lot of Wano.
Exactly. It came out just before that was done.
Then that makes sense, because like the Wano arc lasted like 4 years in real time. So it's I'd be shocked if there was like Wano probably needs its own entire video game. But that sounds good. I did play the first Hokuto no Musou when it came out, but it was at a friend's house maybe twice. I think it came out when I just finished university. But I remember it like being interesting, but I was more impressed that we were getting a Fist of the North Star game in North America to begin with, because it's you can get that anime and manga pretty easily now, but for a while it was like, again, hugely popular in Japan, not really easy to find Hokuto no Ken stuff worldwide, but now there's Ryuga Gotoku Studio made a Fist of the North Star game. I think there was a fighting game made by Treasure of all people. Or was it Treasure or was it Arc System Works? I forget. But with respect to all the Gundam fans and One Piece fans and Hooked on a Ken fans out there, this wasn't the real driving Omega Force behind this episode. Starting in 2014, right around 10 years ago, Omega Force started adapting other video game series into the Musou formula. And a lot of these were RPGs, and a lot of those resulting Musou games had a lot of RPG elements. And going back to what Dynasty Warriors was from the very beginning, these RPG adaptations are celebrations. I mean, I would say a lot of them are fan service because none of these games are as elaborate or as satisfying as a real full entry in any of their respective games. But they do a lot and let you play with your favorite characters. And to prepare for this episode, I finished 2.5 of them and tried out a couple of others. But yeah, they started out with Hyrule Warriors in 2014, which is has characters into it and a lot of DLC following it all the way up to A Link Between Worlds. Then Dragon Quest Heroes, which were two games in, I think, 2015 and 2017, which were big adaptations of Dragon Quest games, including some new character designs from Akira Toriyama. Two Fire Emblem games, Fire Emblem Warriors in 2017, and then Three Hopes I think that one's 2023. I think Three Hopes is 2022. But those are adaptations of Fire Emblem, with the second one being very, very much a sequel to Three Houses. And then Persona 5 Strikers, which is Persona 5 Scramble in Japanese, a direct sequel to Persona 5 in this style and genre. So starting with you, I guess Audra, go first this time. I assume that at least one of these piqued your interest. So how deep are you into these Omega Force RPG adaptations?
Well, I really want to try my hand at the Dragon Quest ones and possibly the Persona 5 and Three Hopes at some point. I did actually, for this episode, I played through the first Fire Emblem Warriors, and I really actually liked it a lot. It's a fun crossover game. It has like a lot of characters from throughout the Fire Emblem series, and it doesn't have the best story, but I'm like, yeah, it's better than Fates.
Well, so. Oh boy. maybe you knew this was coming, Audra. Fire Emblem Warriors was one of the ones I played to prepare for this episode. I probably feel a little bit more negatively than you to it. There's a lot of Fates and Awakening characters in it, because those were the two big ones when this came out in 2017. And it really just feels like a crossover fanfic involving all of those. There's a big dragon who's very mean.
Yes, the evil chaos interdimensional dragon.
Yeah. I liked some things it was doing. Like, the base gameplay was pretty fun, and they had the Fire Emblem weapon triangle that is sometimes, that's mostly pretty good, but a little bit annoying if you just have, you know, an ocean of axe-wielding enemies and your best character by far is a lance wielder. And a lot of it is, like, map control. It's like, when one area is threatened, get your units over there to save them. Capture these forts to lower the next barrier, that kind of thing. But the thing that really bothered me by it is that this game has so much DLC, and the DLC characters are in the game already, in the story already. Like, you meet Navarre and Oboro and Owain and others. They have dialogue and cutscenes in the story mode, but they're DLC only characters. I think the only characters other than from Fire Emblem that weren't in Fire Emblem 1, Awakening, or Fates were Lin and Celica, and they aren't in the story. They're only in the post game map challenge maps. So I was a little annoyed. It's like I don't love this character selection. The gameplay is mostly good, but sometimes frustrating. And I thought there was like a little bit of a naked grab for those DLC dollars that didn't sit very well with me.
I could see that. I mean, I ended up actually liking Leanne the most, so I didn't even play with any of the other characters.
Oh, I used Lucina and Camilla a lot. They were my main sword and main axe wielding characters. I used the two new story characters for most of the part. Because they give you new original sword wielding lords to a twin brother and sister. So I would use the main character, but then I would use Lucina was my favorite sword wielder, Camilla was my favorite axe wielder, and I would just use, I don't know, like whichever Wyvern Knight was available for spears. but yeah, like it's a fun game, and it's especially fun if you like Fire Emblem Awakening and Fates a lot. But I haven't played Three Hopes, but I've heard that one's much, much better, in part because the character selection's better.
Yeah.
But also it has a story that sort of piggybacks off of Three Houses in a mostly satisfying way. Wes, have you played that one?
I have. I haven't finished it, but I've played quite a bit of it. And it solves one of the main problems that the first Fire Emblem Warriors has is something that comes back to haunt the series pretty regularly, which is move clones. They've got characters who are roughly the exact same character. Maybe they have a different Musou attack or something.
Oh yeah, the Pegasus Knights were completely interchangeable. Mm-hmm. There was not a big difference between Marth, Lucina, and Chrome. That makes sense.
Yeah, and they fixed that in a big way in Fire Emblem Three Hopes. All of those unique characters that you got to love in Three Houses, hey, good news, they're still there and they feel unique to each other. So you really get a lot more power over, okay, who am I going to use? And this era also introduces almost a replacement for multiplayer, even though multiplayer is still present in most of these, wherein you control more than one character. This started in Hyrule Warriors Legends, I want to say, but it's used in a big way in the Fire Emblem games where you are tactically moving. You control, you know, four different characters at a time, I believe, mm-hmm. and you're tactically moving each of your other characters to like, okay, you go to this base, you go attack this boss, you do this, and you go do your thing, and then you swap to those characters that have already arrived at their points. And it kind of keeps the action going. You don't have to do the running between point A and point B, you just need to tell them where to go, which is a cool little strategy RPG crossover that they introduce in there.
You know, I did get this game on sale a long time ago, even though I haven't played Fire Emblem Three Houses at all yet. So, my intention was maybe to, if I liked Three Houses, maybe continue on to Three Hopes. But mostly it was on sale, and one of my favorite comedians voices the main character. Mael Shez is voiced by Damien Haas. So I'm like, yeah, I'll support Damien, and I'll maybe I'll play this game eventually. So I did not try Three Hopes, although it is perhaps regrettably in my Switch game case right now.
Yeah, I want to try that one. Just I like Three Houses, but just so far I didn't have the time for it, unfortunately.
One thing that's a commonality between several of these is there's a very, very lengthy post game. If you look at like the How Long to Beat page for Fire Emblem Warriors 1, it only takes maybe 10 to 12 hours to beat the game. But if you want to 100% people's weapons and skill lists, you have to do all kinds of map farming and ingredient farming, and you'll probably break 100 hours trying to do all of that, which I am not willing to do. I beat the game, and then I used a Lin map for about like an hour, and then I was done.
They introduced those maps in Hyrule Warriors, maybe one of the kind of expansions for it. And it's kind of a shame, because a lot of the coolest stuff is hidden behind that. Link has, you know, one or two weapons that you can use during the main Hyrule Warriors. But if you play the post-game content and go through these like pixelated maps that they have you kind of explore through, he can get so many different weapons. And some of them are like wildly specific, like the spinner from Twilight Princess or the ball and chain from Twilight Princess. Or
yeah, and I think like you can just replace your sword with the ice rod or the fire rod and stuff like yes. that. Like it gets pretty crazy. Let's pivot over to Hyrule Warriors, because that was the first in this sort of second wave of licensed games from Omega Force, and they're mostly popular among the fans. The first Hyrule Warriors had multiple years of DLC. It was a Wii U game that got a Switch version, and the Switch version came with all the Wii U DLC, so that's pretty nice. And I did notice that I think in the last DLC pack they released, my favorite minor Zelda character is in that. So I've had my eye on Hyrule Warriors for quite some time now, but I never got around to it.
If you've ever wanted to play as Tingle.
I was specifically referring to Ravio from A Link Between Worlds, but I get it. I get it. There's dozens of characters, dozens of weapons. They just kept adding characters and maps to it. And so if you, and that's another one where it's like, oh, to beat the game, it's 15 hours, but to 100% the game, it's 1000 hours. Like, actually, I think the number is closer to 300, but still, that's just a enormous amount of sort of backloaded gameplay. But if you want to put in the time, then it's there for you. And the sequel, Hyrule Warriors: Age of Calamity, is a direct sequel to Breath of the Wild. And and I think the storyline is, it's definitely not in the Zelda grand timeline, but it just brings in as many adjacent Zelda characters as they can into the Breath of the Wild setting specifically. And people really, really liked that game when it came out. I mean, did you start appreciating Zelda more by playing these, Wes?
I did. It kind of made me nostalgic for games that I didn't have a lot of nostalgia for. And especially Age of Calamity works as a full action RPG. I might be the first one that they actually advertised as an action RPG through and through. The only reason it got any mixed reviews, so far as I can tell, is performance issues, which is just a thing on the Switch when you've got a big, busy, active game. In a lot of ways, it echoes some of the mechanics of Breath of the Wild. Things like cooking and equipment and all of the different weapons that Link can equip. It ends up being a huge blast, and it made me go back and play Breath of the Wild, which I had barely touched before.
Yeah, if anything, I think their intention was that fans of Breath of the Wild would get this sequel out of interest, but for you it happened in reverse.
Yeah, my Warriors love is just too intense. That's going to be my entry point wherever it can be.
Now, I mentioned that I did sort of think Fire Emblem Warriors was a little disappointing, but I am more interested in Hyrule Warriors, mostly because everywhere I've checked says that the Zelda games are better than the Fire Emblem games in this sub-series.
Yeah.
The problem is they never go on sale. And I'm not sure I want to blow a full 60 bones on either one of them. But I'm curious, because I do like Zelda a lot, although my fandom with Zelda is it comes and goes. I think I'm one of the last humans on Earth that still prefers the 2D ones to the 3D ones for the most part. But I do really like Breath of the Wild, and a Musou Breath of the Wild sequel does not seem like a bad idea. Audra, do you go very far back with Zelda? And I know you mentioned you were interested in these, but did you get around to any of them?
I've played A Link Between Two Worlds,
A Link Between Worlds for the 3DS?
Yeah, A Link Between Worlds for the 3DS. And I did really like that one, but I haven't played any other Zeldas.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a Switch online plan, you can play almost all of them.
Yeah.
And I mean, part of why I love A Link Between Worlds so much is the way that it adapts the setting from A Link to the Past, which was, for quite a while, was my favorite Zelda game. Although that's changed over the years. Wes, I think it's because of yours and Josh Lindquist on our website as well, expressing their appreciation for these games made me more interested in them. But let's move on a little bit. The other Musou game I did finish to completion, other than Fire Emblem Warriors, was one that I liked a lot better than Fire Emblem Warriors, and that was the first Dragon Quest Heroes.
Yeah.
And Dragon Quest Heroes, they're PS4 games. I only played the very beginning of Dragon Quest Heroes 2. I can't really speak with much authority on that one. But the Dragon Quest Heroes games are, as you might surmise, are adaptations of the Dragon Quest world to a Musou style. It's a world where Dragon Quest monsters are very friendly, but then the influence of a dark god turns them all evil, and you have to basically just fight hordes of Dragon Quest monsters to try and save this new Dragon Quest-inspired world. And around 10 or so characters from older Dragon Quest games accidentally fall into portals and join you in your struggle. There's four new original characters, and then around, I think, 8 to 10 classic Dragon Quest characters. But they're fully voice acted. The personality of all these characters shines really, really well. Geo from RPG Fan mentioned that this was his first Dragon Quest game on some episodes that we recorded earlier this year. I think he liked Elena and Carol so much that he went and found a way to play Dragon Quest IV. And so another similar case to you and Zelda, Wes, where sometimes the fandom pipeline works in reverse with these games. But yeah, I thought that Dragon Quest Heroes 1 was quite charming. The Musou gameplay was pretty good. The characters were sometimes clones of each other, but at least had enough differences that I wasn't offended, let's say. They also add a bit of a tower defense element to it, because when you defeat monsters, you can sometimes collect monster coins from them and summon good versions of monsters to defend certain points. So like clearing out an area of enemies, grabbing some monster coins, going to the spot you're supposed to defend, like put a bunch of golems or trolls or whatever there to defend the Yggdrasil root or what have you, and then going out to clear out other objectives are sort of what this game is about. It's like holding off the hordes, but balancing between a party of four that you can rapidly switch between. You don't do as much minutia level tactics as Fire Emblem Warriors. Like, you can't send out characters to different parts of the map. You sort of just keep everyone together and summon your monsters to defend key areas. But I had a lot of fun with it. It's a pretty good, expensive looking game for being a 2015 PS4 game. And it's just a delight seeing these characters that I mostly love interacting in amusing ways, even though I'm not saying there's any, the writing here is necessarily brilliant. And I played this game to completion and really liked it, but Terry is so powerful in this game, he immediately replaced my main character when I recruited him. Like, holy moly, this is the best Falcon Slash has ever been in Dragon Quest history.
He's utterly ridiculous in that game.
It's crazy. He can make clones of himself, and then if you go into Musou mode, you can spam your attacks that'll hit three times with the clones maxed out. Oh man, it's a fun video game. Once I recruited everyone, my party was Aurora, who's one of the new characters, Terry, Bianca, and Jessica the whole way through. I did not care about anyone else.
It's also one of those games I point to whenever there's the criticism of, you know, all Musou games are the same. The tower defense aspects of this is one of the examples of the series doing something a little bit different. It really is a higher focus on that than necessarily the actual Musou gameplay.
It also uses a magic meter with spell casting.
Yes.
That the other Musou games, again, the older Dynasty Warriors games and Fire Emblem Warriors, none of those had that. So they use a lot of Dragon Quest imagery and iconography, the monster designs, the sound effects for leveling up and casting spells. Like, it's extremely Dragon Quest, but it's a huge, colorful, beautiful Musou setting.
Yeah, when Omega Force adapts another property, they go all in on trying to make it feel like that property.
And they did bring in Hori to consult on the writing and Toriyama to provide new character designs. So they didn't. And RIP Toriyama sensei, of course. But yeah, you know what? Maybe because I was in the mood to play more Dragon Quest, because I just finished Dragon Quest XI about a month or so earlier. But this one hit for me more than Fire Emblem did. And that's probably because I like Dragon Quest more than Fire Emblem generally. but also, I just felt like the changes that that Dragon Quest heroes made to the Musou formula were a little bit more successful than Fire Emblem's changes. And Dragon Quest Heroes 2, I do know that that game has a class system with class changing in it, mm-hmm. so you can give almost any weapon to your main character instead of just have him stuck with a sword and shield. And there's most of the cast from Heroes 1 returns and some new ones join. I know Angelo's in it. But yes. But really what we need is a Dragon Quest Heroes 3 so we can have one of these games with Eric and Jade, am I right?
Exactly.
Like, oh, yeah. Jade was made for a Musou game, and and she, like Dragon Quest Heroes 3 is her destiny, and I hope we get that someday. But I'm not that invested in it.
I'd be curious what they do too, because Dragon Quest Heroes 2 really took a departure. It doesn't have any of the tower defense ideas. Although there are still monster coins, it's more of an open world RPG kind of thing.
I heard the maps were bigger, and there's more customization of the main character that the player has.
Yeah, those are all accurate, and you know it expands into more side quests, more side content, more open exploration than just going, you know, selecting a stage and going and doing that stage. They really tried to make that one, you know, a proper RPG, which they've done with a few games.
And to be fair, there is leveling up and skill trees and everything in the first Dragon Quest Heroes, and some of the maps are quite large, but it really is, you know, self-contained stories, objective Musou-based gameplay. It's not really an open-world RPG, and I only played basically the opening cutscenes and a couple missions in Heroes 2. But they do change the tone a little bit. They're trying to make it more of an RPG. I think that's fair.
Yeah, they want it to feel like a proper Dragon Quest game as much as, you know, you can do without the Dream Team on it.
All right, well, moving from one RPG fan favorite to another, Persona 5 Strikers is the third game that I played at length for this episode. I did not finish Persona 5 Strikers. I got probably 8 to 10 hours in. This is a pretty meaty game. I think that I would say in terms of production value and style, Persona 5 Strikers might be the best of the three that I played. Maybe it's because I just like Dragon Quest games more than Persona 5, but this game really leans into the Persona 5-ness of it all. I think it takes place about a year or maybe 6 months after the ending, after the ending of Persona 5. The gang's all back together and they're planning a summer vacation trip, but then some metaverse shenanigans and other world shenanigans unexpectedly pop up. And there's an AI character that lives in your smartphone that joins the team as sort of the new playable character, kind of like, oh, you know, the meme of like whenever Atlas does an expansion, they have to add a magical girl that's mysterious and amnesic, and she makes friends with everyone, and then the story continues. Well, in this game, it's an AI woman named Sophia, and it's not a spoiler. Like you, she tells you she's an AI within minutes of meeting her. And it's mostly a good faith sequel to Persona 5. A few individuals are leveraging the metaverse technology that's at the center of Persona 5 to doing some very, very heinous actions and controlling the hearts and minds of regular people. But you're immune to their influence because you are already, you know, have been to the metaverse before, and you're just trying to foil these. I don't know, but there's at least four central villains that are kind of like the central villains that you steal the hearts from in Persona 5. They're not the same characters, but your story mission in Strikers is similar to the central conceit of Persona 5. But you have all the original characters from Persona 5 back, plus two others, Sophia being one of them, and your missions are some stealth and sneaking around. Like you can do parts where you'd like jump onto chandeliers and drop them on enemies for special moves. When you hit an enemy with their weakness, you can do all out attacks for finishing moves. You can recruit and equip different personas to just the main character to cast spells. There's a spell casting interface and a weakness system similar to the SMT and Persona games. They really, really ratchet up the SMT and Persona visual flair here. Oh, and every character has, you know, persona attacks in conjunction with their regular attacks. It's really, really fun. You do have to think a little bit more with this one than for Dragon Quest or Fire Emblem Warriors, just because they give you more tools. But it's fully voice acted. It kind of reminds me of the Persona 4 Dancing and Arena sequels, because it's a surprisingly robust story for being a spin-off game. And I was enjoying it quite a bit, but then I started playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth in earnest, and I know which of those two games I like better. It's not close. Yeah. But Persona 5 Strikers, very, very promising in its first 8 hours or so, and I think maybe when the year's releases die down a little bit in the next month or two, I will go back to it. So I just talked way too much about Persona 5 Strikers. Wes or Audra, we don't need to go deep into our Persona fandoms here, because again, I adore Persona. I frankly do not want to admit on air how many times I've played Persona 3 and 4. Have either of you tried out Strikers? And if yes, how did you find it?
I have not yet. It's another one that I really want to try when I have the chance. But yeah, it looks really good, and I like the sequel angle.
Yeah, I dove in pretty much right away when it released, because it combined two of my favorite series in a way that I hadn't seen since Dynasty War or Dragon Quest had a crossover with the Musou games. It's more of a mixed bag for me, just because I'm such a big Musou fan, and part of it is that kind of tactical, okay, let's keep up with the frenetic energy of like, what's going on here? Got to go deal with that. Okay, now that put me behind here, got to go deal with that. And Persona 5 Strikers doesn't really have that. It is much more, it hews much closer to like a traditional RPG dungeon structure.
Yeah, it's very corridor based compared to open area based.
And some of that's pretty cool. I mean, there are puzzles to solve. There are cutscenes, you know, in the middle of things. It's not necessarily a bad thing. I think the game is actually really stinking cool, especially the fact that they recreated like Persona 5 style menus in new ways for this. And
the menus are almost jarring how much animation is in them. They really tried to make this a Persona 5 sequel in good faith. And I mean, I definitely like Persona 5 more than Persona 5 Strikers, but I think they succeeded in making it a full throated adaptation. Like it's
absolutely,
they did not skimp on this one.
That's one of the, you know, more impressive things about Omega Force on here. Like I said before, they really do try to make it feel like, you know, the property that they're adapting. And this is one of their most successful because Persona 5's identity is so distinct, and you know, everything about the UI and how these characters interact and the calendar system, all of those things are really, really distinct, and they all make it in some form or another to this game.
Yeah. I did not finish it in time for this episode, mostly because this is a very, very busy time of year for RPG releases and podcast recordings, it turns out. But I think I will revisit it later because I enjoyed what I played a lot. And I think maybe after I take a bit of a Musou break, because I played two of them back to back, I'll be ready to play some Strikers later on. And you know, we didn't really mention it yet. There is one other RPG adaptation that got a Musou version, and it's the most recent of the bunch. In 2022, Token Ranmu got an official version that even released in the United States, even though the Token Ranmu mobile game, I think, hasn't been out in English for a while. I think it's still going strong in Japan. Token Ranmu is, it's compared to Kantai Collection a lot in that it's, Kantai Collection is about famous Japanese ships, but represented as cute girls. Token Ranmu is a game about famous Japanese swords represented by cute guys. Basically, you're some kind of Taoist monk or shrine maiden or something that has the power to awaken the souls of swords. And so you collect famous swords, they turn into handsome men, and you use them to fight evil time traveling bandits that are trying to change Japanese history. So you'll
the retrograde army.
Yeah, the retrograde army. If that sounds like something that would be associated with us or perhaps another podcast, but alas, no. So you're defeating these time traveling monsters with handsome men that are named after Japanese swords. And Token Ranmu is so popular in Japan, it does incredibly high business. When I visited Japan last year on vacation, there was a Token Ranmu store right next to the Nintendo store in Shibuya. you can buy, you know, merch of your favorite sword husbands there if you're interested. And we actually had an interview with some Token Ranmu staff on RPG Fan. Nikki Fahuri wrote the piece that in part mentions that Token Ranmu became so popular that it reignited interest in finding lost Japanese swords that were believed to be destroyed or missing, and some of them were located in private collections or in archives. So, like, Token Ranmu was popular enough that it did the reverse fandom pipeline thing and got people interested in the original content enough to, like, improve the historical preservation of that content. That content, in this case, being, like, famous Japanese swords. It is wild reading about what Token Ranmu is, because it's one of the one of those things that's far more popular than you realize it is until you do the research or play it a little bit. But really, it's a mobile game about handsome fellas named after Japanese swords. And they did a Musou game of it where there's about 15 of them that you can use to fight evil time bandits. I don't own this game, but my partner does. And well, we played the opening missions for a couple hours. I even found a favorite guy, and it's, you know, it's pretty fun. And I mean, I'm not going to make a value judgment on it, but if the price is reasonable, it's a pretty fun Musou game. You can do tandem attacks. The characters I played, there were some clone action going on where a few were very similar to others. There's even two characters, one of whom is a famous replica of another sword in real life, but the replica one has major imposter syndrome.
Oh yeah.
And then that which is sort of part of his character, and but like the imposter one is cooler than the main one in part because in part because of just how in despair he is about it. It's not a bad Musou game at all, but I'm sure to the millions of Token Ranbu fans out there, it was much more than that. It's very unlikely any of us have put a lot of time into the original Token Ranbu game. But Audra, before we recorded, you mentioned you were somewhat interested in this one. Did you give it a try?
I did. I'm about halfway through, I think.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I ended up really liking it, enjoying it. I don't take it super seriously when I'm playing it, just because the story is a little
I do
silly.
Not think this is a game to take seriously yeah. at all. No. But so you have the right mindset, at least.
But it's fun, and I actually watched one of the anime for Token Ranbu before, and I didn't hate it either, so I guess there is, like, it's interesting to learn more about the series in general, I think.
Yeah, multiple anime series, a frankly alarming amount of merch that I noticed just in that store while I was passing through it. But yeah, Token Ranbu is one of those things that's sort of bigger than you realize it is until you encounter it, kind of like Roblox. Wes, you're a little quiet on this one. I take it you have not indulged in Token Ranbu yet.
You have found one of the very few gaps in my Warriors history. I was actually, you know, in preparation for this, keeping an eye open for a sale, but didn't quite find one because it's something that I'm still interested in because, well, it's a Musou game. I'm interested in seeing how the series differs between different entries. But no, didn't quite make it this one.
Right. So anyway, those are most of the RPG adaptations of Musou games. We don't need to spend as much time in this next section, but they did not stop animating. I should say they Omega Force did not stop adapting anime series into Musou games, or at least Musou adjacent games in the 2010s. They did a game based on The Legend of Arslan in 2015. Then a game based on Berserk in 2016, and two other games that did not have the Musou name attached, the Warriors name attached, but multiple games based on Attack on Titan, and then another. I think the most recent Omega Force game is an adaptation of Fate Stay Night or Fate Grand Order or Fate something. I don't understand the Fate series. It's I know there's a lot of them. Forgive me, but so yeah, Arslan, Berserk, Attack on Titan, and Fate all had anime Musou adaptations in the last 10 years. And Audra, I know that at least one of these in particular, you were very interested in.
Yes, I'm a huge Heroic Legend of Arslan fan, so I was really curious about the Arslan game. And I actually played it through completion.
Oh, and it got a full English release in North America?
It got a English translation localization release. It's all in Japanese.
Oh yeah, so it's just like Token Ranbu in that regard.
Mm-hmm. But it was it's a pretty fun game. It's a little on the short side, but I really had fun with it. And I loved it as a fan of the comic and of the manga and the anime.
And I mean, there isn't a lot of English language video games out there for Heroic Legend of Arslan fans. So at least this one did enough, right?
Yeah, I feel like they were really respectful of the source material and just had fun with it. It was very clever, I thought.
Yeah, it's got a few unique mechanics of its own, but it's been long enough since I've played that, heck if I can remember them.
Oh yeah, like the rush zone mechanic. Yes, is pretty interesting.
That was the big mechanic.
Position where you can either like break through barriers using cavalry or infantry charges, or destroy stuff with the concentrated archery attacks. It was a pretty interesting mechanic. Yeah.
All right. Oh no, is there another game I have to add to my Deku Deals wish list? Oh geez. But Wes, before we recorded, you mentioned that you recently got your hands on a copy of one of the Berserk games. Did they make two of these or just one?
Yeah, Berserk Band of the Hawk, as it's called in the West. I've only played a few hours of it now, but it is a really cool adaptation of the manga / anime series that actually uses clips from the most recent anime adaptation to help tell its story. the characters in Berserk are so unique and so distinct that they're kind of perfect for a game like this. Guts especially feels, he's got this giant sword, which feels perfect in a Warriors game. And
there's certainly enough large scale battles and violent manga action in Berserk to merit this kind of game.
Yeah, there is no shortage of battles that they can tease out of this, and that's what I've been finding as I've been playing. Is every few battles are just like, here's one of the major battle, you know, conflicts. There's not necessarily a lot of plot happening here, but you know, here's a new battlefield. Go have fun.
And I'm sorry if this has turned into the dead manga author appreciation station, but RIP Kentaro Miura, one of the like most stunning manga authors that I've ever encountered. Like the 2-page spreads in Berserk are the stuff of legend, for real.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Stunning, stunning artwork.
Yeah.
And well, I have read most of the Attack on Titan manga. I gave up on it a little some time ago. But I mean, the anime and manga were hugely popular for a while, and the first of these Musou adaptations came out in 2016, probably when the manga was, or the series was either at its peak popularity or just after. So I'm sure those sold well. But these are not called Musou games. Attack on Titan. It's sort of more specific to the what the series does, rather than being a full full-throated Musou game. But it is developed by Omega Force and is often put up alongside their other anime adaptations like Berserk and Arslan.
Yeah, it takes the idea of, you know, going after giant enemies a little bit more. So it's not necessarily the 1 versus 100, but it's got some cool little zipline Spider-Man mechanics, and it really does have the same impact when defeating Titans that, you know, especially you see in the anime. I imagine fans would have a blast with it. I'm a mild Attack on Titan fan, and I still had a pretty good time with it.
I would also call myself a mild Attack on Titan fan, maybe lapsed fan, because I never finished it, and I sort of dropped it a while ago. But for a while, it was one of the biggest things going on in anime, if not the biggest thing. So it made sense for them to adapt it in this way. And then the last one, I mean, they did a Fate action anime game. It's also not a Musou game in name, but those Fate games do have a insane variety of characters, mostly named after historical figures. And I'm not a Fate expert, so I apologize for oversimplifying this, but a lot of sort of time travel characters meeting each other across storylines and across dimensions. The mobile game Fate Grand Order is one of the most popular gacha games to my knowledge, or that might be old knowledge I'm working off of, though. So it's I would say another logical adaptation by Omega Force, but I have not played this one and know extremely little about the Fate series at large, because all I know is that there's always more games and more characters than I think there are.
Yeah, that's true of Fate Samurai Remnant on its own. There are more characters than you're expecting when you go in, because there are specific rules to how the Fate world works, and this kind of bends some of them to include more characters, because while it's not a Musou game, it tries to be more of a complete action RPG. There are definitely moments where, okay, let's give you access to all these characters and have you obliterate huge sums of enemies.
Thank you for that, Wes, because there was zero chance I was going to play a Fate game for a podcast. With apologies to the Fate fans out there, including my close friend Paul. But this ain't it for me. But I should say that we planned this episode several months ago. We thought about even doing it in 2023, but it didn't really happen. And I am glad that we finally got around to it, because now, I mean, I got to satisfy my Musou curiosity, finally play my copy of Dragon Quest Heroes that I've had for about as long as I've had a PlayStation 4. And I genuinely enjoyed it, and enjoyed Fire Emblem Warriors a little less, and Persona 5 Strikers as much or more. So, yeah, I'm still going to price check Hyrule Warriors and maybe play Dragon Quest Heroes 2 eventually, but I'm more curious and interested in Musou games than I have ever been before, even though I sort of roll my eyes at my old buddy Eric buying literally dozens of these. Because, I mean, Wes, I know you're a big fan of them too, but how many times can you quell the Yellow Turban Rebellion and it not feel a little bit old?
I haven't found a number yet, but you know, sometimes it does get old, especially in that series. There are entries that don't do as much as they could to make the Yellow Turban Rebellion feel like something special.
And listeners, if you're listening to this without knowing very much about second century China, the Yellow Turban Rebellion was a big event that lasted, I think, 20 years or so, where that was a Taoist slash religious uprising that contributed to the fall of the Han Dynasty and led to a bunch of local warlords trying to take over the Chinese government after the collapse of the warlord Dong Zhuo.
And as such, it's the first level in every Dynasty Warriors game.
Correct, yes. It is one of the first levels in every single Dynasty Warriors game, at least since Dynasty Warriors 2. And like, whenever Eric had a new game and we started playing it together with football on in the background, one of us would be like, oh, okay, Yellow Turban Rebellion again. Let's get it. Who gets to use Lubu this time?
The only reason I'm not sick of it is because Dynasty Warrior 7 started introducing like actual storytelling into this. And I was like, oh, this is what the Yellow Turban Rebellion was about.
I think I know more about the Yellow Turban Rebellion in actual historical context than I do about the Dynasty Warriors games, just because there are so many characters. And I just could not tell you the difference between a Dynasty Warriors. You could talk about the minutiae differences between, say, Dynasty Warriors 6 and 7. I wouldn't know a single thing about them. But I do know that these games are fun on the surface and have developed a huge fan base over the decades. And I'm kind of excited to see what the next silly series Omega Force adapts is. Which leads me to one last question before we get into the end of the episode. Is there a sequel to an existing Musou game or an IP that has not been adapted to a Musou game that you want to see more than any other? And I mentioned earlier that I would be very intrigued by a Dragon Quest Heroes 3 with Dragon Quest 11 characters in it. That is still true of me, but maybe it's because I've played Final Fantasy 4, 5, and 7 Rebirth over the past month or so, but I think Final Fantasy is such a natural fit for this. Like who says no? Fields of goblins or mechs or monsters, a handful of characters across the spectrum of Final Fantasy games. Like, what if Dissidia was a giant sprawling action RPG? Sounds like a blast to me. Oh. I mean, who says no, for real?
Oh, like, yes.
Even if it's just a bunch of Final Fantasy VII characters, because that's the hotness right now. Like, I wouldn't even be mad at that.
You know what's funny is that last year, the producer of Dissidia actually said, the idea of doing that is definitely a possibility because Dissidia gives you that franchise flexibility to include everyone.
Yeah, in fact, I think I did read that same article, or at least saw that same comment that at least one Final Fantasy producer is not opposed to this kind of game. But I mean, maybe that was low hanging fruit a little bit. Wes or Audra, do you have a favorite IP that you wish would be the next Musou game?
You know, I was just thinking, if I wasn't going to say Final Fantasy for this, or like Dragon Quest Warriors 3 would be awesome. I think I might lean towards the Legend of Heroes Trails series.
Interesting.
Ooh, that would be a good one.
They definitely have the volume of characters to provide a pretty good roster for that.
Yeah, I think it would be actually pretty fun. They'd have a lot of variety and they can spread out characters smaller. The different sub game series and everything, and even like the anime,
they would give you 36 characters to control, but you always have to use Rin.
Oh, that would be mean.
Scott would love this.
Game of the year 2025. I like Legend of Heroes, but I am a little bit sick of Rin. I'm more interested in Trails Through Daybreak than anything than the other recent one. In part because my boy Damien Haas voices the main character again. give him another Musou game to voice. Go for it. But Wes, do you have an IP that's yet unadapted to Musou that you'd like to see done so?
Besides the obvious Final Fantasy, I think we could all agree on that one. I got to give a little shout out to Toriyama because I think Dragon Ball would make an amazing Musou series.
Yes. Oh man, just hordes of Frieza's
Soldiers.
Frieza's soldiers. Oh man, even if it was just the four major DBZ arcs, I'd be into that.
And think about how good it would feel to defeat that many enemies with like one of the big old special attacks that you get out of there. Your big bang attacks, your Kamehamehas, all those could be big bombastic explosion moments that make the Dynasty Warriors series, you know, that serotonin boost.
We didn't really mention this, but in almost every Musou game, there is some kind of meter where you go into Musou mode. It's Musou mode in Dynasty Warriors. And in Dragon Quest Heroes, it's high tension mode. In Fire Emblem Warriors, I think there's like a Warriors mode and a Musou mode or something. You're always balancing super meters and doing flashy super moves. I mean, how natural would that adapt to going Super Saiyan in a DBZ game? Like you go into Musou mode, your hair changes, you go wild, giant finisher move. It practically writes itself.
Yeah, and you know, you've seen all of these arena fighting games from Dragon Ball Z, and you know how big that roster can get. They would never run out of characters to adapt.
Yeah, I mean, Dragon Ball FighterZ, the Arc System Works arcade style fighting game. Aren't there just like already six Gokus in that game?
Yeah, you can make a roster out of Gokus.
you can make a giant roster of 100 characters, and an entire column of them would be Gokus. And people would say, you know, they didn't do this 11th Goku. That would have been great.
Where's my Ultra Instinct?
If they didn't, they would have to include Ultra Instinct Goku, right?
At this point, I think it's too iconic not to.
Yeah. I think I saw the memes with the Ultra Instinct theme before I even saw the episode in completion. But, you know, maybe I should say something besides Final Fantasy, because I think that was the one that all of us were at least thinking before it really happened. And, I'm going to go back to something that is close to all three of us and is something that I accidentally said on social media a little while ago. Some weeks ago, I said I was playing Dragon Age Heroes. Instead of Dragon Quest Heroes on Blue Sky, and I apologized for it, but then the comments were like, hey, yo, what about this Dragon Age Heroes? Like, tell me more about that, because I don't know, like, controlling, say, Varric, Ogryn, Morrigan, and Iron Bull, and just defeating hordes and hordes of Darkspawn doesn't sound like a bad time to me.
It just feels right.
I don't know, that would be awesome.
And again, I mean, that was just me, doing, like, writing a typo, because I was playing nothing but Dragon Age and Dragon Quest games for a month or so earlier this year. But I mean, any series with a large scale battle, like a 1 versus 100 style of gameplay, that might fit is probably could fit, because, like, as a genre, it's so flexible. And if you go in with the right mindset, don't take it too seriously. Like wrap your head around new mechanics and go wild and like enjoy these fun adaptations of a series you really like. It's way easier to enjoy a Musou game if you already like the IP that they're adapting, which is why I'm unlikely to get the Attack on Titan game anytime soon. But like it's fun and versatile, and I sort of understand why it's had built such a massive fan base over the years, which includes my good buddies Eric and David, and as well as you, Wes.
Oh, absolutely.
And I mean, we did get an announcement in December that that there are more Omega Force games coming into our future, but I don't think we know of any of them yet. Is that right? Like, I think we know that Dynasty Warriors 10 is being made, but we haven't seen hide nor hair of anything Omega Force since that Fate game.
No, and you know, it's going to be interesting to see what they do next, because Dynasty Warriors 9 was received really, really poorly. So I'm expecting, you know, a big shakeup like they did the last time a Dynasty Warriors game really failed. The next one they made was one of the best in the series, so I'm really hoping for something similar.
All right, and Audra, I mean, you haven't played as many Musou games as Wes has, but do you think you're a little bit closer to maybe trying out another one of these than you at least were a month or two ago?
Oh, absolutely. I think I want to take out my copy of Three Hopes and give it a go at some point now.
I kind of want to play Three Houses before Three Hopes, but I'm definitely very close to finishing Persona 5 Strikers and busting out my old copy of Dragon Quest Heroes 2. That might even happen later this year.
Yeah, I want to get my hands on a Dragon Quest and maybe one of the Gundams too now.
Oh, I like where this is going.
Those Gundam games were mostly 360 and PS3, right?
Yep.
Got it. Awesome. Okay. Well, I'm not sure if I'm going to go back to playing Dynasty Warriors Gundam, but I can tell you what we're playing next on the podcast here on Retro Encounter. Thank you so much, listeners, for joining us on this journey through the Omega Force oeuvre of games. And thank you, Audra and Wes, for joining me on the panel and having this fun discussion. But let's talk about what's coming next on Retro Encounter. Next week, we're doing a series that is probably not going to get a Musou adaptation anytime soon, but it is getting an Amazon adaptation very soon. The Fallout series of games, which is most recently curated by Bethesda Softworks, is getting a live action adaptation. From Amazon Prime Studios. So we're having a sort of mini Fallout feature going on next week on RPGFan.com, where multiple staff are going to review classic Fallout games, and we're going to have an accompanying episode of Retro Encounter to go along with that. So Jono is going to host that episode, just talking about the Fallout series at large, a game we have not covered on Retro Encounter, but a game that I've mentioned several times, mostly because Fallout 3 is set right next to where I live, near the U.S. nation's capital. After that, those Fallout episodes, we're finally going to do a spoiler cast on Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I am near the end of that game, and hopefully I can finish it the next week or so, so I'll be prepared to record that episode. I'm enjoying it a lot, so it's mostly going to be a positively toned episode, but let's say there's some caveats. It's not going to be all sunshine and roses for that spoiler cast, but that is coming in about 2 weeks. And also coming in April, we're doing two episodes on the Ark the Lad series, one about Ark the Lad Uno and a second about Ark the Lad Dos. They're just called Ark the Lad and Ark the Lad 2. I don't know why I went briefly into Spanish there. But those are some classic PS1 era strategy RPGs that have developed a niche fandom over the years, and were one of the last releases of the famous localization studio Working Designs when they finally came out in the early 2000s in English. And Wes, I know that you're a big fan of Ark the Lad, because you'll be hosting those episodes.
I will be. My first go at the captain's chair. I'm really excited. I've already played through Ark the Lad 1 and have a good start on Ark the Lad 2. These are amazing games. They're going to be great to talk about.
Excellent. And while we haven't quite ironed out all of May yet, I can say that after Ark the Lad 2, we're going to have an episode with a special guest that you might be familiar with if you watch RPG fan creation content on YouTube.com. But that's enough for now. If you want to get into contact with us about Musou games or Ark the Lad or Final Fantasy VII Rebirth or Fallout Boys, you can always email us retro@rpgfan.com for the most part. RPG Fan also has presences on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, rpgfan.com, vanilla version, and even a Discord called RPG Fan. Please interact with us however you choose. But maybe the best way to interact with us is to buy merch on the RPG Fan shop. If you go to rpgfan.com/shop, you can find a link to apparel and accessories hosted by TeePublic, and a link to the RPG Fan book, which is a collection of around 300 one-page reviews hosted by Hyperplay RPG, a book publisher based in the UK. But also, the RPG Fan Podcast Network has two other fine podcasts there. Random Encounter every 2 weeks about randomness and what games are playing, and Rhythm Encounter every other 2 weeks about RPG music. Please rate and review Retro, Random, and Rhythm Encounters on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or however you listen. We love feedback, especially when it's of the positive kind. But if you want to leave us positive feedback to our individual social medias and not at any of RPG Fan's presences on the internet, let's tell you how to do so, starting with you, Audra.
I can be reached at email, audrab@rpgfan.com.
And now, Wes.
You can find me on Twitter @WesIliff and on Blue Sky @LoneWeasel.
And listeners, if you want to find me on the internet, I am @EvokeForDogs on Instagram, Blue Sky, and RPG Fan's Discord. Maybe if they ever make a new Samurai Warriors game, Yusuke from Persona 5 can be in it, so we can see multiple versions of Goemon with their own silly repartee. Listeners, thank you. Good night, and good luck.